begin our service with the opening hymn printed in the light blue or gray order of service, which you'll find in your hymnals. Please stand. Fellowship of Winona. My name is Dick Dahl. I've been a member for 6 years. I serve on the Chalice Committee and am the newsletter editor. If you are new to our Sunday fellowship, we especially welcome you. We hope you enjoy our service, and we invite you to stay for coffee and conversation afterwards. Are there any introductions by our greeter or any who would like to introduce themselves? To you all. We have a few announcements this morning. The choir will practice tonight from 6:30 to 8 p.m. at Gail and Charlie Opatz's home. The K through 12 or through 4th grade students will be making their Day of the Dead altar today. If you brought photos or mementos of loved ones who have passed, Tove will collect those now. Please take a moment to visit the altar after the service. Where will it be?
Right outside.
Oh, okay. The UU Youth will meet briefly after the service today and next Sunday and on Wednesday, November 12th at 6 p.m. at Acoustic Cafe. Also, there is a letter from Partners in Health thanking us for the donation that was sent. On behalf of the poor and vulnerable people across all the communities Partners in Health serves, thank you for the gift of $345 from the Unitarian Universalist Fellowship of Winona received on October 16th. You're helping to sustain and expand life-saving work every day. Well, the title of our program today is a discussion of Michael Werner's book, Regaining Balance, The Evolution of the UUA. I was supposed to announce next Sunday's program, which will be, I think, led by John Collins. And it's, would you tell us?
It's a humanist testimony. It's about the sacredness of each of our individual journeys and the special relationships that each of us have that sustain us in those relationships.
Thank you, John. Are there any other announcements? I don't believe so. At this time, we will affirm our community by saying together the chalice reading as printed in the order of service. We have come together today.
Now is the time to make this our place. We are Unitarian Universalists. We like this chalice. It is our symbol. It represents all of the important things which make us who we are and which hold us together. Let us create our space together and make for ourselves a safe place to grow and learn and to be fully who we are.
Please stand while we sing hymn 113, Where is Our Holy Church? Very fitting to the terms of today's discussion. 113.
There are 5 verses, but it's short.
Okay.
We invite you now to place a shell in the water in celebration of or in concern for a person or an event in your life that we may share in your joy or give you comfort in your sorrow. And I'd like to ask, when you do come up to share a joy or a concern, would you please face the congregation before you start speaking so we can all hear what you have to say. I'm going to begin by placing a shell in the water in recognition of our principle number 3, acceptance of one another and encouragement to spiritual growth in our congregations.
Dennis and I had a really pleasant surprise on Wednesday, I think. We were at the Science Museum, and Alexa Acre, who is volunteering there, she's a senior in high school, if you can believe it, for those of you who know her, and she looked beautiful and radiant, and she approached us, and she said, "Are you from Winona?" And she was just very happy to see us, and she wanted us to greet everyone. And she says Lily is taller than her, if you can believe it. And so I'm sending her greetings.
I'd like to say happy birthday, and I think a small round of applause to my good friend, Joyce Burmester. It's her birthday today.
I'd like to place 2 shells in the water, one for my dear brother-in-law, Canadian, lives in the far reaches of Saskatchewan. He died totally unexpectedly 3 days ago. Either a renter or the police found him in his favorite easy chair. My sister, who is now alone, was 7-hour drive away in Regina getting some medical treatment. So it's going to be a tough road, but Chris was a great brother-in-law. I wish for a peaceful journey for his spiritual energy. And I think also my sister, who is in the early stages of Alzheimer's, she's alone up there now, has a business to wind up. Thank goodness they've lived there 40 years, and she has a village full of good friends. And I'll be getting up there as soon as I can to lend whatever help I am able. But they are certainly in my thoughts, each in a different way. Thank you.
I would like you to send good vibrations to Jerry. He has been suffering from gout, I told you not, for 2 months now. And it's really been hard for him.
I'm Carol. I'm happy to be here this morning. My car started. The last 2 Sunday mornings it has not started, and tomorrow it goes in the shop for an alternator. I'm placing a shell in the water to remember my daughter's father who died 8 years ago, and another one for Nicole who will turn 30 next Sunday. Yikes. I don't know. I was young. I don't know. I think I have to be 30. And then lastly, I asked for prayers. I had surgery 9 weeks ago, and I'm still waiting for my incisions to close so that I can start radiation treatments. Thank you.
I would like to place a shell in the water for 2 individuals who I've just learned within the past month are on their way to sobriety, and such energy, such hard work that they have gone through, and this is for their continued good work.
We will now take a moment of silence for these concerns and joys, both spoken and unspoken. the children please come forward for today's story? And Jim, do I pass out the offertory basket now?
Yes.
Okay. The offertory basket allows us to be good stewards of this fellowship. Feel free to either give a portion of your pledge or an additional offering if you desire, but if it's cash, please put it in an envelope with your name. And one thought about this, when you share with another, both of you have more.
Do you guys remember Tog, Frog, and Toad, our old buddies? We have another Frog and Toad story. Apropos to our discussion today, it's called The Hat. On Toad's birthday, Frog gave him a hat. Toad was delighted. Happy birthday, said Frog. Toad put on the hat. It fell down over his eyes. Oh, I'm sorry, said Frog. That hat is much too big for you. I will give you something else.
No, said Toad. This hat is your present to me. I like it, and I will wear it just the way it is.
Frog and Toad went for a walk. Toad tripped over a rock. He bumped into a tree. He fell in a hole.
Frog, said Toad, I can't see anything. I will not be able to wear your beautiful present. This is a sad birthday for me.
Frog and Toad were sad for a while. Then Frog said, Toad, here's what you must do. Tonight when you go to bed, you must think some very big thoughts. Those big thoughts will make your head grow larger. In the morning, your new hat may fit.
Oh, what a good idea, said Toad.
That night when Toad went to bed, he thought the biggest thoughts he could think. Toad thought about giant sunflowers. He thought about tall oak trees. He thought about high mountains covered with snow. Then Toad fell asleep. Frog came into Toad's house. He came in quietly. Frog found the hat and took it to his house. Frog poured some water on the hat, and he put the hat in a warm place to dry, and it began to shrink. The hat grew smaller and smaller. Frog went back to Toad's house. Toad was still fast asleep. Frog put the hat back on the hook where he found it. When Toad woke up in the morning, he put the hat on his head. It was just the right size. Toad ran to Frog's house.
Frog, Frog, he cried. All those big thoughts have made my head much larger. Now I can wear your present.
Frog and Toad went for a walk. Toad did not trip over a rock. He did not bump into a tree. And he did not fall into a hole. It turned out to be a very pleasant day after Toad's birthday.
Describes him as an ardent humanist and Unitarian Universalist. Having been past president of the American Humanist Association, vice president of the Fellowship of Religious Humanists, an adjunct faculty member of the Humanist Institute, and also president of the Unitarian Church of Charlotte. Bob Youngerman is enthusiastic about this book and so supportive of what Werner states that he bought 5 copies for members of our fellowship to read and circulate. And he urged the Sunday Service Committee to include this discussion as one of our programs. So I know some of you have read the book. Jan Taylor sent out an email with 6 pages of excerpts from it that I had selected. And when Bob told me about the book some months ago, I ordered it, read it, and found it so stimulating that I copied out those 6 pages of excerpts. Since he found he was unable to be here today, he asked me to fill in for him. Mr. Werner and I have somewhat different perspectives on what truth is. Nevertheless, I have tried neither to advance nor to denigrate his point of view, but rather to present it as accurately and clearly as I can. So I'm going to present today an abbreviated group of quotes from the book in four segments, the first of which is what he sees as the problem. The second and third are causes of the problem from his perspective, and very briefly at the end, what he hopes will happen. And then after that, what I'd like to have is invite open discussion from all of you, and if time permits, maybe to break into smaller groups so that everybody actually can have their own input, share their own thoughts. Well, first of all, Michael Werner writes, appreciation for truth has become an imperiled value for UUs. The historical focus on rational religion has been abandoned. UUs discarded the value of reason, critical thinking, science, and progressive thought. Critical voices were silenced. UUA no longer attempts to answer the big questions in life. The search for transcending thought is minimized. However, he believes there is a longing for an integrated whole view of life that matches with reality, a vital center to our lives that grounds and inspires us. He argues that we must overcome the fear of our primal nemesis, that if we form a common answer to anything profound, we will have created a dogma. Second, so that's what he, as I perceive it, perceives as the problem. Second, he sees the beginning of the problem when Unitarianism joined with Universalism in 1961, when, in his opinion, and I'm quoting, pluralism won out over reason in religion. He felt the responsible search for truth was replaced by an ideology of toleration and diversity. UUA is now radically equalitarian and inclusive. It uncritically embraces any and all. He quotes Robert Latham, who wrote, "Instead of a mission, we substituted community, social action, and political correctness. And the end result is a permanent identity crisis." He also quotes a Reverend David Bumbaugh, who wrote, "They," referring to liberal religions, "offer an unexamined piety rather than a solid faith." Werner himself writes, "UU's indiscriminate pluralism adopts unbalanced liberal values, has lost its way, entered a retrograde period, and promotes the majority cultural position," which he sees as theism, a belief in God, "at the expense of the minorities, humanists and atheists." Universalists, by the way, have a primary principle of universal salvation, that everybody eventually finds happiness and anyway, the third point here, another group, or another source of infection, as it were, he cites certain social changes that have influenced us. He writes, counterculture emphasized the experiential over the rational. Extreme subjectivism and skepticism was biased toward relativism and anti-intellectualism. Second wave feminism stressed intuitional skills over head-only male thinking. He cites again Reverend David Bumbaugh, who wrote, "Liberal religion faces the possibility that it may be overwhelmed by an ambient spirituality that has no outward focus, but slides easily into a therapeutic mode, offering an endless journey of infinite regression into the self, offering therapy rather than faith, comfort rather than adventure. Werner finds particularly distressing at Medville Lombard, which has always been the primary Unitarian theological school, what he calls the lack of an academic seriousness as pastoral education becomes more prominent. And finally, after all this, despite these criticisms, he states, "I am not an either, it is not an either-or situation." He says, "I hope for a balanced sense of values, a realization that there is no right way to do UUism. When we place one value over all others, it becomes ideology." Okay, that's that. Now for a group discussion or response. Bob Youngerman suggested something, and the end of the book suggests a number of possible questions also. Bob's suggestion is, "I ask whether you think that joining with Universalists was a positive or a negative thing for Unitarians." And the book, among other questions, suggests, "What focus, if any, should UUA have? Are the big religious questions important anymore? And how should the UUA respond to the secular revolution?" So that's what I've prepared. I'm open for any comments. What do you think? Yes, Margaret.
Well, I had great difficulty with the book because he's so pissed off. He's so angry. He's so, and his language, I somehow wasn't able to get past the language because it was a language of anger and name-calling, I felt. A lot of it was name-calling. Having said that, that's not very positive. The positive things it brought up to me was how good this fellowship is. I look at this, the words of the music that we read this that we sang this morning, "What is our Holy Church?" And I look at his concerns, and I think for each of those five, count them, five verses, we do what this hymn suggests. And I note that it's the words are later than the music itself. All of which is to say, I think we do a fabulous job in this, with this service committee, particularly, it's ironically, with this current set of services on spirituality, of asking the big questions and having responses to them.
Thank you. Yes.
I too had a lot of trouble with the book. I only got about halfway through and just couldn't dig any further. Okay, the first question you asked was about Unitarianism joining with Universalism. And that happened before I ever came to UUism.
1961. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And so I don't know the church.
Oh, you're cute!
Anyway, so I don't know the church before that joining. But my understanding is that Unitarianism and Universalism both came out of strong Christian roots. They were Christian denominations. And that they have stepped out of being Christian per se. And my understanding of UUism, not understanding what he said, but my understanding is that it's based on our seven principles, which I see as really social principles, not dogma about what each of us believes about God and heaven and the big questions. And what's important for me about our faith, is that even the right word, is that we do have diversity in how we think about those big issues, and hopefully we can talk about it. I find that we can talk about it and be acceptant of each other. I am proud that in the many different UU churches that I've been in, we've had Christians and Jews and atheists and humanists, but anyway, a wide variety of people who have different religious ideas, but who join together saying it's important that we live on this earth together according to these principles. And I'll shut up.
Beautiful.
Yeah, I think
I did read the whole book and pretty carefully, and this is an area of interest of mine in a scholarly framework too. I think that the way I read the book is that I was trying to find out what his complaint was, or what the essence of his complaint, and it seems there were several which could be addressed differently. One is that he's afraid that the UUs will just dissolve and cease to be and need to have a strong brand. There was a lot of talk about, you know, if we become the humanist church, then people will know who we are and will stop making fun of us for having question marks on our lawn because they'll know what we stand for. But the thing that he doesn't really do is define what he means by humanism. What does that even mean? And I think from the best that I could tell from the way he was talking, his humanism is about a 1960 humanism, which is a belief in that science has all the answers and that that can be reached by reason and that those answers are inarguably better than the answers provided by any other venue. And I think, I'm not sure that is the only definition of humanism, first of all, and I think that it's a definition that is very problematic. He's very dismissive of postmodern philosophy and a lot of other things that make him grumpy, that he doesn't seem to really engage with, he just rejects. And I think that one of the things about the UU Church that he points out is that it's always changing as society is changing. And I think that the idea that we could have a humanist church that would just be all about science and what he calls reality, I think there was a moment, as he says, for that. But I think that the reason that failed was not because we all just went back on our word or something, but because that idea came up against some serious, got us into a lot of trouble. Because I can't go into it without a long philosophical discussion, but I think what I'm saying is that I don't think the book is really engaging with the critique of that version of humanism. And I think that what I value about our congregation is precisely that everyone is trying to reason together, but no one is trying to enforce the answers. And he finds that repugnant, that we're not trying to enforce the answers. But I'm not so sure that any of us would be here if the church looked the way he wants it to look. In other words, it would be basically identical with the Humanist Association, which is already existing. So, you know... I did, however, take to heart certain critiques of his. I do think that we're sometimes kind of fuzzy, sometimes not too challenging. The idea that the church should be more prophetic, I think, is good. And the other thing is, I think that if he feels that he's being marginalized or not listened to, that's an important thing. Like, I don't want any atheist to feel like he or she can't speak from an atheist position. I love that. That's what I love about being here, is that people speak from their truth as they know it. But if he wants me to be just like him, then I don't think that's where I want to be.
Ray and then Gene.
Going back to the original question of bringing in the universalist and I've always thought a good deal about Unitarians as the mind and Universalism as more concerned with the body and the body dancing about the good news that we're all saved and we can put that in the background. Universalism seems to me, I don't think we would have our seventh principle of honoring the earth without Universalism being in here. And that I can't think of a better time to be honoring the water and the shells up there on the table than right now when those very things are endangered. I think that has to be our way forward.
Thank you. Jean? And then thank you.
Well, I've been coming to this fellowship for 10 years, and I feel completely removed from UUA. I don't think it had that much influence on our fellowship. I mean, we pay dues to it. Marilyn shows up every couple years, and, for our regional representative, but I don't feel any allegiance to the UUA as such. So I don't know if that's a good thing or a bad thing. But
thank you. Dennis?
How I feel.
Yes. Yeah.
I'm going to talk, stand up, if that's okay.
Sure.
I've been really impressed with the universalism thinking, and not only the authors you're familiar with, but a number of people that work in the field that I do, of trying to understand how we connect with each other and how we don't connect. Because I think they're both a huge issue. But I think that the, and I'm taking it from the word universe, that the readings I've done that look into the wisdom and spirituality of the universe that have to do with constantly trying to evolve to a higher place, whatever that might be for people. But I think that, to me, the spiritual connection is a social spiritual connection in terms of how we put love into action toward each other. To say I love you doesn't mean a whole lot unless we're putting that into some kind of behavior and attitude in connection with another person and other people. And I see the universe as a great source of wisdom in terms of the interactions that are going out there that we, some we have no knowledge of, and some are just starting to find out that a lot of the things we thought were true were not true. That's the kind of discussion I'd like to have with a number of people here at different times, because I just love what I'm learning about all that and learning about connection. So I just think it really goes along with the spirit of this group also to be open to whatever is working for people, and it's okay to agree to disagree. I think that's important.
Thank you. Anybody else? Yes, Emma?
I haven't read the book, but when you mentioned the second wave feminists embracing intuition, I think he may have oversimplified that. and that Carol Gilligan's work on the ethic of care is really aligned well with Buddhism and the ethics of compassion and how we can go forward with an ethic of compassion in our world. And that does kind of relate to what Dennis was saying about connection and seeing that. And that the feminists did not want to throw reason out with the bathwater, but wanted to acknowledge that as we do our critical thinking and our reasoning, it's not enough just to judge things based on sort of a logical this or that, either or, but to include emotion and emotional appeals and compassion and feelings along with it, and that, that as humans we are fully thinking and feeling beings.
In the talk I gave a couple weeks ago, I had quoted Einstein, who said, is this not working?
Just push it closer to your mouth.
Oh, sorry. That he learned, he got more of his insights through intuition than he did through reasoning. Yeah. Yes, Fred?
Oh, I just wanted to say that the Winona UUA has a connection to that original coming together of the Universalists with the Unitarians. Back in 1961, when we were meeting in the Hotel Winona, Dr. Ray Houts was one of the members. And Ray and Clara had moved to town, and Ray was teaching in my department, chemistry, at Winona State. And he surprised everyone by telling us that he had been on the committee meeting in the East Coast with the Universalists when the two organizations came together.
Okay.
So I wanted to say that we do have a connection.
Anyone else? Thoughts about, yes.
Just a follow-up, that when he says rational religion, that connects to the late 19th century when Theodore Parker was teaching, was preaching in Boston. And what that meant, what he talked about was rational Christianity. And what he meant by that was applied Christianity, which was let's do the deed and not just worry about, you know, we don't need the supernatural to intervene here if we're doing the work. And I think that that leads directly to this idea of a creedal religion, of a non-creedal religion, or a religion that has principles and then says if you want to get here, get to those principles one way or another, that's okay, but you have to do the deed. And I think that's a kind of unique and wonderful religious approach. And I think that this book doesn't really address that appropriately in some ways. Because the idea that if every, it is a kind of religious belief that if everybody were just rational, we wouldn't have any problems. If everybody were an atheist or a humanist, the world would be perfect. But most of the deaths that occurred in this century were perpetrated by atheists and humanists. If you talk about communism, if you talk about even, I mean, Nazism is pretty debatable, but if you look at a great many of the genocides perpetrated in this century, they're perpetrated by people acting reasonably. And I think that that experience of the 20th century informs a very, very sort of curtailed belief that we can suddenly think our way to being righteous if that's where we end up.
There's a book I read a few years ago, The Happiness Hypothesis. I forget the author's name, but one of the points he was making, he's a positive psychologist, school of psychology anyway, was that the brain has many different functions. Part of it is the logical analysis part, and a part of it is an intuitive. He used the example of a person riding an elephant, and he can guide that elephant if he's trained it, but if the elephant wants to go where it wants to go, it'll go there. And he alluded to another part of the brain that's like that. And one of the reasons I put in this month's issue of the newsletter, a quote from Lewis Mumford: "One of the functions of intelligence is to take account of the dangers that come from trusting solely to intelligence." And I noted in Time Magazine, a copy of which came yesterday, it refers to this new movie coming out called Interstellar. And it says, "Big cosmology has become our secular religion. A church even atheists can join. It addresses many of the same questions religion does. Why are we here? How did it all begin? What comes next? And like religion, cosmology has its own high priests, Einstein, Hawking, people who, like Mohammed and Jesus, don't even need second names." So. Just one other thing. David Brooks writes for the New York Times. I like his writing. He had an article Thursday about artificial intelligence, how machines are able more and more to do what we thought distinguished us, which is reason. They can do math better. They can play chess better. There are a lot of ways in which now they accumulate information about us that suggests things that we will like before we even consider the options. He says, on the other hand, machines cannot beat us at the things we do without conscious thinking. Developing tastes and affections, mimicking each other, building emotional attachments, experiencing imaginative breakthroughs, forming moral sentiments. And in the future, there is increasing emphasis on personal and moral faculties, being likable, industrious, trustworthy, and affectionate. So, I don't know, I might just take the liberty since I'm leading this. Oh, yes, John, go ahead.
And in his little biography, he emphasizes the importance of balance of the mind and the heart. But in his writing, it's like 98% of the mind. But I think if you look at our musical efforts, you'll see that the song the hymn that Margaret referenced, but just the whole sense of music, there's a nice combination of heart and mind there, if you think about the words and the feelings and that sort of thing. So rather than follow the money, as he was concerned about in the book, let's follow the music.
Thank you, Chuck.
I don't want to dominate discussion, but I was really powered up by this book. I want to say that I do think, however, that it's easy for us to affirm that if anybody in this congregation wants to say, I don't believe that, or I, you know, that I don't believe in God, that great, I'm sure many of us here don't. So I think that to affirm that humanists, atheists, whatever, theists, everybody has a place at the table, I think that's a good thing we can say right now.
That's what drew me here more than anything. Yes, Ray?
Well, we have this whole discussion of God here. And I don't think I believe in his God, but I believe in a God. And I guess I'm talking about a spirit of life. But to throw God out there all the time without a more universal reference point, I find it very difficult to read. And one of the things I found difficult in the book, he talks about our search for inclusiveness. And then he points out the fact that we're not black and red this morning. We're pretty white out here. And that we have not been inclusive, even though we talk about inclusion. But he talks about it as a bad thing. I'm not sure it is.
Well, I was originally thinking if we broke into small groups, people would share more easily and everyone could. We have 10 minutes. I don't know. I see some people shaking their heads. They don't want to do that. Okay, well, we won't. And we can discuss it more individually over coffee and refreshments. Well, thank you all. We will go on then. Let's see what comes next. Oh, yes, Jen.
I would like to say that I thought you did a marvelous job of drawing in your notes of drawing out some positives. When I heard you just now, it's like I read the book and just slammed it shut. You know, it seemed like you pulled some things out of there that are food for thought, and I appreciate that.
Well, thank you.
I agree.
Yeah, I found it a very stimulating book. Yes, Paul.
I'm just wondering if there's a possibility, either off-site or at some point in time in a future meeting here, of having Bob Youngerman come up and talk more about it. You know, what really stirred him. And I know he gave. He gave some excellent points and excellent questions on that, but I'd like to hear more from him on this. It's a bummer that the fact that he was not able to be.
He expressed to me he felt very offended by criticisms of humanism at some point. He said, read chapter 9 again, and I did read it, and it's probably some of the criticism maybe you were referring to, Jim, and wondered whether he even felt comfortable continuing in the fellowship unless that's apologized for, or something like that, or even suggested maybe UUA should sever its relationships with Unitarians. I don't know if there are many Unitarians around. But so I know he feels strongly, but I think it is the sense of not feeling welcome, or somehow that his views as an atheist are incorporated. So if we sing a hymn and the word God is there, I think he finds that offensive. He said, can't we strike that word? But then, to me, that's not really being open to other points of view. And you don't have to believe in God. I guess if you sing something to God, then maybe you feel you're in a quandary. But that's what I understand is his position. I hope I'm not mistaking it. Yes?
Well, I was just going to say, I don't know how we help anyone, Bob or anyone else who is offended by saying the word God in a hymn, for example. But it kind of goes back to what Ray was saying, is that, you know, people have different visions of what God is, and if you get really literal about, you know, I don't like this vision of God, so that when I say that word, then I'm saying that. That's not so necessarily, not And so it's like getting tripped up on the word instead of just allowing that, it, you know, it might be different for a different definition for me than it is for somebody else, but I'm not going to get tripped up on the word. And I don't know how we help people not get tripped up on the word. I think it's good to keep talking about it.
I was impressed, you know, we've had a speaker about Hinduism a couple of years ago, and this, and what it means to me is that there is some kind of insight into what's really meaningful and true in everybody's point of view. I think there are a lot of things that are inaccurate, but then there's something that's really solid. There's something that an atheist sees that's worth thinking about, trying to appreciate. A Hindu, a Muslim, whoever it is, even a Roman Catholic. So I appreciate the openness by which this fellowship has expressed itself. Yes?
Well, and I remember coming, I guess I came maybe 20 years ago with Eric, and I was Lutheran, grew up Lutheran, and I was a little bit insulted at first, but I think it was me. I just took that on myself. There was some people here maybe that weren't as tolerant of God, and that still meant a lot to me at that point. And it was more, I was more scared to hear all those thoughts and to hear all of that, because in my church we just talked about one thing. And even though other people in the church maybe felt other things, we didn't talk about it. And so it was. I think it was fear. A lot of it is sometimes fear, or what the person's going to say, or what they really mean, or what they might make you, how they might make you change, that you're scared about. That's kind of how I think I felt at first. And I have a book that has Jesus sayings on one side and Buddha sayings on the other side, on the page, and that helped me so much, because my sister's a born again Christian. She gets so nervous about me with that book, but I just said, well, if I don't understand what Jesus said, sometimes I can read the other side, and it makes it perfectly clear, and that's still somewhat my comfort zone, but it doesn't scare me anymore.
Yes, Dennis?
Thank you for your comment, because one of the things I run across a lot, because I work a lot with communication issues in my work, and my work just having relationships as a person, is that it's so important when we're feeling insulted or misunderstood that we need to check it out immediately with that individual and say, I'm going to tell you in my own words what I just heard you say. And I'm also going to share in this process about what I was telling myself about what you were saying. And let's see how much of that is the truth for you, and sort it out right away instead of going away feeling hurt or discounted or diminished in some way, which is very dangerous, I think. I think that's why our world is so caught up in so much negative drama. We don't take the time to find out, am I correct in assuming you're telling me this in my own language, of course? And then usually it's that part of it might be true, but a lot of it may not be true. And so I think that fits exactly with what you were talking about. And the more we do that, the more we can connect at a good level and forgive ourselves for misinterpreting most of the time.
And what this discussion means to me is that each one of us, each person here, each one of you, your own view is important to us, the rest of us. Some may speak more readily, express their views more readily, but I think there is a fundamental respect for each person's point of view. So I really appreciate what's been shared and would love to hear what hasn't been shared. Yes?
John was.
Oh, John, did you want to say something?
Yes.
Oh, I was just going to say Bob is on the service planning committee, he's on the music committee, so he has ample opportunity to check out things with people. So he's in good shape.
I was raised Methodist, and religion was not a choice for me. My mother crammed it down your throat. It was, you get to church on Sunday or else. And that was a threat. You know, that's how she got her 6 kids to church. So when I turned 18 and left the house, I didn't go to church for 10 years. I said, that is not for me. And a friend of mine was killed tragically and had a 2-year-old daughter, and I had a 2-year-old daughter. And that's what took me to the Unitarian Church in Rochester. Mm-hmm. My sister found a newspaper article and said, Carol, I think this might be a place that you would like to go. So I went. Within the first month after my friend had been murdered, and I sat down in those pews having no idea what UU meant. And the first Sunday that I went, it was Easter, I think, and there was a 12-piece jazz band playing. And I said, this is my kind of church. I felt welcome, I felt accepted, I felt comforted, even though I knew no one in that place. And to me, that is the litmus test of how do I feel when I'm there in the presence of other people, you know, and do I feel respected? Do I feel accepted? Do I feel uplifted by whatever? Is it the conversation? Is it the music? Is it the sermon, if you want to call it that? You know, but those are the things that are important to me. And to have a choice, I just can't emphasize enough that religion is a choice. So when my daughter went to Cotter High School at the age of 13, she had her own spiritual crisis because they wanted to pray before every class, and she said, Mom, they expect me to say these words. I don't even understand what they mean. I'm not going to say them. And I said, good for you. And she didn't want to go to Mass, and so I would pick her up from school. I said, you always have a choice about what you believe and how you participate. And I came head to head with the administrators at Cotter High School. And they said, well, you know, why isn't she here? And I said, because religion is a choice, and because when we signed up here, I was told that 25% of your students are not Catholic. You know, so they didn't like that, but we made it. Both of us made it through that. But you know, I think we are a wonderfully welcoming community. We're highly educated, and we have strong opinions, and we're vocal. And that's my kind of group. You know, people who are willing to speak out for what they believe.
Great statement. Thank you. Yes, Fred.
Every now and then I try to envision a perfect world. And the perfect world I envision has no religion. I've written two papers. One is Islam as a World Problem. And I think we can just look around and read the newspaper and see how Islam is a world problem. Muhammad was a very cruel person, and his religion is very cruel, and it's continued. When I visited Tibet, I saw a very calm and wonderful religion. They don't even step on ants. They're very peaceful people. Unfortunately, another religion has arisen, and that is Maoism, and has moved into Tibet and moved into various areas, and that is challenging Islam as the major world problem. Anyway, that's it.
That brings us full circle. Fred was thinking big thoughts, just like Toad did the other night. So that's great.
Yeah. Ideology seems, whether it's a religious one, political one, seems to become oppressive. But, well, thank you all. It's time for us to sing our hymn. If you would stand, we're going to have hymn number, page 16, Simple Gifts. And that will be followed by a little bit of meditative music. Yeah. Okay. Over here.
16.
And I place a shell in the water for you. Thank you. Wonderful.